This week I received an email from one of the families that we support as a missionary, the Starnes family, Steve and Angie Starnes. They were actually friends to some of us when they were in school here in Gainesville many years ago. The Starnes felt called of God and responded by taking their three small boys and moving to Northern Africa, into an Islamic country in Northern Africa. After about a year or more being there in that land, it has become clear that the Starnes are not to stay, and they are now in the process of returning back to Florida. Now, for some, that might seem like failure. And it takes incredible courage to uproot a family, quit a prosperous job, and move to a foreign country. But I think it's even more courageous to move out by faith, and then if you figure out it's not where you're supposed to be, to have the guts to own it and to come back home. And you'll see in our news and our prayers of the people that we will continue to be praying and supporting the Starnes for a while until they get reestablished here in the States. And we need to continue to uplift them as they continue to seek to be courageous for God and for the gospel. But I had a particular thought as I was reading Steve and Angie's email this time, because I've caught this before, but it didn't really register until I began to work with this gospel message tonight. And it's the way Steve and Angie end all of their correspondence. And I'm not sure where it's from. It may be from John Piper, who's a famous missions pastor in the States. But at the end of their correspondence, they always say, "Ruined for the ordinary, Steve and Angie Starnes." Ruined for the ordinary. In other words, we've experienced something so extraordinary that the ordinary will never be good enough again. Ruined for the ordinary. Seems like a appropriate title for this passage in Luke chapter 5 tonight. You see, this is the account of Simon. We know him more often as Peter. And the point in which he comes to follow Jesus Christ as a disciple and ultimately an apostle for the gospel. We know that Jesus has encountered Peter already. In chapter 4, he's actually healed his mother-in-law. But it seems that it is only in this passage that the gospel really hits Peter, Simon Peter, where he lives. You know, go to church, sounds all good, leave with an incredible tingling feeling, but Monday morning's coming and there's paperwork and there's clients and there's customers and real world starts all over again. Simon is in the boat business, in the fishing industry. Something I would not enjoy very much. And he's had a hard time of it. The Lake of Gennesaret is just another name for the Sea of Galilee. It's one of the names the Old Testament Jews gave to the Sea of Galilee. This is the only place it's called the Lake of Gennesaret, but it's the Sea of Galilee, the same body of water. A rather large, large lake, about 12 by, I think, 20 miles wide. Peter and his two business partners, James and John, those three, you know, will make up the inner circle for Jesus, his three closest disciples in the Gospels. They're in the fishing industry, and they've had a hard night of it. They've been out, and they've come back in. I guess you fish early in the morning or during the night. I'm not exactly sure, but I'm not a fisherman, as you can tell. But they've come in empty-handed. And now they're in the process of doing the messy work, the paperwork, you know, Ray, after, you deal with a patient, then you've got to go fill out all the paperwork. And so this is the fisherman's equivalent to paperwork. They've got to tend to the nets. They break and they must be mended. Can you imagine hundreds of feet of wet net? Sort of reminds me of my first job in the business world. I was working for the Hardee's Corporation. Wore the brown polyester suits back. This is back in the 80s, and we had to wear these. It was horrible brown polyester uniforms. And the worst part of the job was cleaning out the milkshake machine. I don't know if you've ever cleaned a milkshake machine, but it would just about ruin you from wanting a milkshake if you do, because it's a nasty job. Well, Simon Peter is the equivalent of cleaning the milkshake machine. They're getting these nets out, sorted out and dried out. And apparently they put them back into the boat, by the way the story ends. When Jesus says to Peter, pull your boat out into the water. And it's a real practical reason. He wants to use the amplification off the water to make his voice carry. And so he can speak to this whole crowd who's gathered along the shore. So Jesus sits down and he teaches. And the crowd is just hanging on every word. I wonder what Simon Peter's doing. Is he attentively listening, or is he trying to catch a few winks in the back of the boat? Worried about what he's going to do about tomorrow's catch, and will he find the fish the next time he goes out? At the end of the sermon, Jesus says to him, Simon, push on out into the deeper water and put your nets down. Now, the way Simon answers immediately, you know that this is a polite response, but it's a bit condescending. He uses the word master, but you really think that Peter doesn't mean that Jesus is a master at fishing. Master, I'm a professional fisherman, and I've been out all night, and we've toiled, and we've caught nothing. You're not going to catch any fish now. But because I respect you, because you're the preacher or the pastor, I will acquiesce to your request. Tongue in cheek. And so they go out, and Simon puts out the nets. And lo and behold, the fish that they begin to bring in is so plentiful that the nets begin to break. Probably some of the very mending that Peter had taken care of hours before. And the second boat is called out. And even that boat cannot sustain the quantity of fish that come out of the water. The boats begin to literally sink. Simon Peter has just witnessed one of those incredible moments in life where God doesn't just do something in church or in the synagogue or even with your mother-in-law. He gets into Peter's personal space, universe. In his vocation, the place Peter lives, he takes the tools that Peter knows and does something extraordinary in Peter's stuff. And Peter is amazed. He's caught off guard. He's humbled that God would use little him. He's probably also a bit ashamed of his condescending attitude. You see, it's as if Peter really doesn't think that Jesus has the power to do something in his ordinary everyday life. He's got God in a little box. He's got Jesus limited. And Jesus busts out of that box. And he does it using Peter's net. And Peter and James and John's boats. and he's amazed. And Peter cries out, "Lord, go away from me. I am unworthy." Jesus says, "No, no, no, Peter. Don't be afraid." I love those words in Scripture. They bring so much comfort, especially in times of pain and suffering. But they also bring comfort when I feel like I've really screwed up, you know? Like I've really missed the boat, no pun intended. Jesus says, "No, Peter, do not be afraid." This is the point that Jesus has to bring Peter to, you see. The point in which Peter is come to bear with the glory of God, the realization that God is so much bigger than we thought He was, and that He can even work in our everyday, ordinary lives. And when He does that, we're humbled, and we have to confess our lack of faith. But what Jesus says to Peter is, "No, Peter, be not afraid. Now you're ready. Now you're ruined for the ordinary. Because now you know that I've not just come to do special things. I've come to use your tools, your resources, your little ordinary life to do something extraordinary." And when that happens, you guys, when you see God do that in your life, you too become ruined for the ordinary. When you can see God use your simple words or your action towards another person, or even when it's not even something you're intentionally doing, but God, in the midst of it, does something extraordinary and makes it so clear that it's Him that's all over it, in that moment, you are like Peter. Humbled, humiliated, recognizing your own sinfulness and the limitation you've placed on God, and yet, Jesus says, ready for the kingdom work. "Be not afraid, Simon, for now you are ready to catch men." Now, this is sports fishing. This is not catch and fry on the pan kind of a fishing. This is catch and release, except we catch fish for God. We catch men for God, and we give them to Jesus. Literally in the Greek, it's the words alive catch, catch alive. Jesus says, Now, Peter, you're ready for kingdom work because you've experienced my work in your ordinary, everyday life. And that's why it says at the end of the verse that they came into to the shore and the men, Peter, James, and John, they left everything and they followed Jesus. They were ruined for the ordinary. Who wants to go fish on your own limited understanding when you just witnessed the greatest catch in the history of the world? Who wants to be a part of the ordinary when you've seen Jesus do the extraordinary? Once it happens, you're ruined forever. You really are. Now, I know I'm like you. I look at that and think, gosh, what does that mean? Does that mean I have to quit my job and I have to move someplace and do something different than what I'm trained to do? Well, there are many people in the gospel that when Jesus calls them, he changes their life and then he says, now go back home and tell your friends and family what I've done. So it's not about relocating. It's about being ruined for the ordinary. It's about never being satisfied again with just what little things you can see on the sides and read about in the newspaper. It's wanting to see Jesus do it again and again and again. Again and again and again. He does it all the time, folks. It doesn't always have to happen at the moments when you're really doing something by faith. It's really very simple, just opening yourself up a little bit to God to experience what I'm talking about here. To seeing in our own way Jesus perform the kind of miracle you see here. For me, it happened most dramatically, really, when I was about 24 years old. I was a really cocky insurance underwriter who thought he could walk the Christian walk and walk the secular walk simultaneously. Be in the world and of the world. And it made a complete mess of my life. And I ended up, long story short, in a little Episcopal church, and I'm kneeling at a rail, broken. And a man by the name of Dennis comes and lays hands on me and begins to pray. And the only thing this man knows about me is the sin in my life. In the midst of that time, this guy, Dennis, looks up at me and says, I don't do this, I don't say this kind of stuff, but I got to tell you that I don't know why, but God is just telling me that He's going to do, He has some things planned for your life. Dennis didn't know that I was running away from a calling to be ordained. All he knew was sin. He didn't know anything else about me. And yet, in the midst of that circumstance, I saw God do something extraordinary. And He ruined me. Because no self-respecting man would say anything good about this jerk that's sitting before him at that altar rail. And friends, I've seen it time and time again. It starts by just opening up ourselves to Him. My walking to that rail that day. And you don't even have to mean it. I mean, look at Peter. He didn't even really mean it. He just was being polite when he offered his boat and fish lines. Just try Him out. Say, Lord, here's my relationships. Here's my finances. Here's my vocation. Come on, let me see you do a miracle in this. You don't know the people I work with. You know the people I live with. I guarantee you, if you let Him, Jesus will do extraordinary things. And you'll be ruined for the ordinary. May we be a church ruined for the ordinary. You see, there's a message for the church too here. I don't have time to preach it because we got to go see a football game, but there's a message for the church. You see, when God calls us and when He directs us, He brings in such a quantity of harvest that no one church can contain it. Can you imagine? Can you imagine calling up Artie and say, Artie, you got to take some of these new believers because we've maxed out. We could only disciple so many people. First Assembly, can you handle some of our overflow? For Westside Baptist, can you handle some of the overflow? We're having too many people. Man, ruin for the ordinary. May it be so in our lives. In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit.